Again, I would be happy to discuss with you. This will be a pleasure, because I'm just wonder why but last 10 years I didn't do even LD plus year. So simple. Okay, in any case, I have some slides, all slides, and we can discuss. So maybe let's first look what I have. And there is, in fact, I checked yesterday evening, there are a lot of nice of course, I Google a bit, LDA plus U. So there is a few nice presentation of my friends, and I can probably tell you. One is very good from Yun Yu from Seoul University. So LDA plus U, so it's, I said it was maybe success is from its name, so it's about in already 15 years ago, it was the idea of Vladimir Anisimov. So let me start. So the collaboration, of course, with Anisimov and Потеряев when he was still in Yekaterinburg, and Misha Kuznetson and Porovsky when he was still in Nijmegen. So these two persons now in Ecole Polytechnique with Antoine Georges, and Leonid was here. So today we discussed just complexity of transition metal system, and so there is this very simple scheme called LDA plus U, so this Centaurus, which you know, it's a funny that nobody in fact like it, no, neither DFT community nor many body community. I just try maybe to discuss with you that indeed it's a very simple and why it become very popular. It's a simple and you can get what you want, you know, if in your system. No, if in your system you have spin charge and orbital ordering, you get it because for mode insulator. And then we will discuss a little bit a way how we go beyond. So this LDA plus DMFT, so includes the local fluctuation. And if you're interested, and maybe after, if you still have this, I will be whole the month if you have time. I will probably want to like to discuss with you the way going, this is still local approximation. So the way going beyond beyond DMFT, maybe in a few weeks when I will relax. So I'm still. So main question, so this is a nice workshop about multiplets and modes in solids. So we all know atomic physics. So in pure atom, starting from Raka, I don't know, 60 years ago, he did this in 1944, I think, and 43. So he managed to calculate analytically a multiplet structure in solid using in atoms, sorry, in atoms, yeah. Still upside down, jet lag, sorry. In atoms, so using some kinds of Raka parameters or Slater parameters, what F0, F2, and F4. So it's amazing that he managed to do this analytically. And in fact, in student time, I even use this. We call Raka theory. But again, nowadays, if you have a small computer like this, you just exactly diagonalize and you get all the multiplets. So if you set up your Coulomb matrix, in 1 second, you will get all the multiplets. So I'll show you. Solid is another limit. So if you have, say, aluminum, so starting from Walter Kohn, we know that there is a density functional theory which describes very nicely. So there is its exact theory density functional. So Walter Kohn is here, so it was always nice that you have theory of other limits. So you can you in solid you have a bands, broad bands, starting from d orbital, you have a broad bands, sp and f. So you have a band structure. And what is in between? In fact, nobody knows. And if I ask a question, even the most brave of you, what happens with multiplet? If you go from atom to solid, probably will not answer me, and I also don't know the answer, in fact. Probably it's for Oleg, so if you still have time, maybe this month for this experimentalist. I know one very good experimentalist here in Trieste, Carlo Carbone, and he making a very beautiful experiment somewhere here. So he put iron atom on a top of alkali, so on surface of alkali, and make a photoemission spectrum. And then depends on alkali, so if there is a big alkali atom, so this iron behaves more or less like atoms. And you see the multiplet structure in your photoemission spectrum. So if you go to lithium, so this is, I don't know, potassium. If you go to the small alkali, then you see more or less formation of quasi-particle near the Fermi surface, like resonance, and this. There is no multiplet. But he also has something which is in between. Something like, I think it's potassium. And in fact, it's a very interesting question. Could you see the both effect? Multiplet and quasi-particle. And in fact, the answer is that he sees it. I'm not sure, so what is the exact theory? We try to do it different, unsuccessful, and one is very simple, successful. But again, I can maybe, if it's interesting, I can talk later.
When you say quasi-particle, you mean the sharp spectral feature at Fermi surface?
Yeah. Fermi surface. Fermi surface age.
The structure and the density.
Right. So in fact, in my view, this is the first experiment that they see something in between, which is, has a Bose effect. Very interesting. Probably true. Good.
It's a good metal, is it?
What? Alkali?
Yeah.
Alkali is a metal, but there is an iron atom. And you know, sometimes it behaves like an itinerant system, sometimes it behaves like localized atom with a multiplex. And sometimes it's even between. But it's an interesting question from anybody physicist, yeah. So what is this transition? Is a crossover where you could see the both? Because I'm low level, I'm electronic structure. Maybe we can discuss. So let's start from the theory. So if you are a theoretician, of course, you say, let's write a Hamiltonian for solids. So we just find some orthogonal basis set. We can later discuss this on black box table if you have more questions. So I use the second quantized form of Hopping. So this is general Hopping, this is site. So let me just put some. So I have solid, and in my view, solid is something like this. Yeah? So it's well defined, thank you. So it's well defined atomic-like structure, and you put this atom with the name I, this atom with the site J, and there is some basis set of localized orbital. So phi is localized orbital, which depends maybe on m is orbitals.
Are those the atomic orbitals, or is it?
No, let me, okay, very nice. So phi I. So, and if I don't specify, I will put I as all quantum number, I, M, L, spin, and so on. And what I need is just orthogonal and adapted basis set for solid. So recently it was nice discussion by Wiener function in solid. So I will say it's adopted, so Wiener function, so well localized, orthogonal, maybe with some tails, which is atomic-like feature, has atomic-like feature, not a plane wave. So, and then this is a Hopping. So of course, between atom I and atom J, you have a Hopping, T. This is one electron process, and in a Hubbard-like view, so this is what I call it, multiband Hubbard. We just restrict ourselves for interaction, which is pure local. So of course you could say, no, can be long-range interaction. First of all, we can put this in a mean field long-range interaction, and this is just a renormalization of Hopkins. If you really want to discuss effect of non-local interaction, so then let's discuss it later. So I will assume that the, and it's very physical, from again, for multiplet, interaction is interatomic. And Hubbard was the first just to distinguish. Because again, if you think about atomic scale, so a scale of the U, so you have U local, where all this spin and orbital indices is the same. So all the I is the same, and all the M is the same, and this is of order of what, 10, 30 electron volt for atom. So there is some non-local interaction with M's. So still all I, but M, M prime. It's about one to two electron volt. So this non-local Coulomb interaction, still on site, but non-local in orbital. There is some kinds of exchange interaction where you interchange indices, yeah? Then you call it J, still local, but also depend on orbital. This is about also the same order, about 0.7 electron volt.
These numbers are based on just evaluating the matrix element.
Yeah.
Bar.
Yeah. Right. So this is a Coulomb interaction. Of course, we don't put a bare. So we put some screening in the solid, and it's
a. So with a single atom, what do you do? Is it just a dielectric
coupling? Both solid. Yeah. Yeah.
Just a, so you. But to get those numbers, then what did you choose? Have some numbers here.
So, okay. So the question is, how you do the calculation of this Coulomb interaction in solid? So, no. My answer is, do first some so-called GW calculation. Calculate the screen Coulomb interaction in solid. And then find this basis set in solid. Go ahead and calculate this matrix element with screen interaction and some localized by, and then you will find this scale.
Hey, why is it better than just taking the bare Coulomb interaction on the atom between those orbitals?
No. No. The physics. Okay. The physical picture of, for example, d atoms. Yeah. So you have, for example, the same this iron atom. It has 3D shell. So all the core shell, core, you don't care. Yeah? Then there is a valence shell. So 3D, 4S, and 4P. So probably quantum chemistry, yeah? So Nicole, yes, probably. So this is what we are interested in. This is a valence band. And then you want to find effective U. So you know that most correlated orbital is 3D. So you want to find this U matrix for 3D orbital. So there is a lot of process of screening.
If you're going to include all the orbitals in your Hamiltonian as degrees of freedom, then you shouldn't be putting spinning, right? I mean, it's be double counting. Spinning will come into play if you're going to eliminate something and you're talking about an effective low energy theory or something where you're not going to have all the orbitals. If you're going to have a complete set of orthogonal orbitals in which you're going to expand the Hamiltonian, then you have to put the bare interaction. You can't put
Where is this? Is the screening coming from the other atoms or from the filled shells on the individual atoms?
It's a two process. So for all other screening from all other atoms, and there is not only, so you see that screening is effect of all electrons. So if you want to discuss the screening, then you better include all electrons. So this is somehow already, as you said, only valence.
Yeah, that's the issue. I mean, when you put I and M, I mean, are you including only valence electrons, or are you putting all orbitals in the atom, including the filled ones? I mean, what is the labeling?
No. You include as many orbitals as you need. And for this orbital, you calculate a static screen U. So there is a...
I mean, why don't... Is this better than just solving the atoms as best as you can, you know, by taking the backhole interaction, all these orbitals, getting a, finite size filter?
So in atoms, okay, good. In atoms, U is 30 electron volt. Okay. In solid, so I'll put even here something like 5. In solid, it can go to the 5 electron volt.
How do you define U in the solid?
We will discuss later. No, but what means how you define? Second derivative of total energy with respect to your electron number, local. So you just take one electron from this D shell and calculate how much energy you need to put it on next atom.
I mean, you're in the band picture already, or what?
There is few methods. First, you could do so-called constrained LDA calculation. So you do the same calculation with the same basis, and then you try to calculate optimal static screen U. There is this, Uli Gunnarsson discussed this. So.
Screened by what?
Screened?
By other atoms, or by...
By other atoms and also by, statically, by, I mean, deeper shell as well, no?
So the deeper shells are not included in this model?
Sure. It's not included. Because you see this, screening is, just depends on your polarizability. And polarizability, there is a lot of people now trying to calculate this first principle, and then you find that you could take into account a deep core, and these states as well, because there is a lot of excitation going on inside. So of course you're right. If you can start with all electrons and all orbitals, then this is a bare Coulomb interaction. But it will not bring you close to solid, because there is a long way. So first things which you have to do then, to calculate at least some dielectric constant.
Well, you could try to solve the atom and then calculate its dielectric constant and then...
No. But screening is very non-local in solid. This is well known. Screening is very non-local, and here we try to restrict ourselves with local model. And moreover, there is experimental way.
Screening is local. I
mean, no.
What's the screening length is in a solid? I mean, the inverse is in a metal, certainly. In the test jar, screen on.
No, it's screen on some two, three neighbors you need. That this one. But this is theory for insulator.
Actually, they screen less well. That's right. But yeah.
Not really. Let's put this the standard mode system is nickel oxide. Yeah. And then it's well known. You can go and do photoemission spectrum for D states in nickel. And then you get effective U in photoemission. So if George Zawadzki will do, he know very well. It's 8 electron volt. They know. They measure this excitation from D shell.
It's a physical quantity. It's not a parameter in Hamiltonian.
All right. But we can calculate with the same Hamiltonian photoemission spectrum, which is a Green function, and do exactly the same number. I mean, it's a difference between this n plus to n excitation to n minus. So we do green function afterwards. So it's a physical excitation. So be consistent with photo emission. But if you start with unscreen, then this is simplified model, you're not going far. So this sounds
with your treatment of it. But I guess I want to understand what exactly the procedure is. I'll reserve judgment on it.
So
what do you actually put in to the
No. I will do this. Let's wait one. So here I said that if you start from unscreen Coulomb interaction, then you will not get any reasonable result. If you start from unscreened Coulomb interaction, then please take into account all electron and even some non-local Coulomb interaction as well.
Just tell us what you do. I mean, sure. Well, to get these plots, what have you done? I mean,
still introduction. So, again, so as I mentioned, If you have this matrix, Coulomb matrix, then you could just diagonalize it for atoms. So you have only this part, yeah? This. That? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You forget about Hopi. Okay. This is some renormalized Coulomb matrix. I will explain you if you need later how we do this for indices matrix. Mm-hmm. So we use quasi-atomic like Slater type theory. But in any case, if you have this matrix, you can diagonalize and calculate from spectral representation green function of atoms. And this is what you get. If you include in a first order approximation Hopping, so you calculate the atomic green function and Hubbard-1 approximation. It's just, again, this is just, let me just put it here. No, it's fine, it's just 1 second. So this is Hubbard so-called one approximation. So you did atomic green function G minus one, you take a Hopping, and then you get something green G minus one for solid. It's a very bad approximation, but first step. This is what I said, Hubbard one. So this is it. And then you already see that for some materials, you see the multiplets in solid. But it's very bad approximation for quasi-particle structure near the Fermi level. That's well known from model calculus. But again, so this Raka physics you can do on computer.
For this calculation, mm-hmm. What's in your basis set, you only have the F orbitals or what?
No.
What do you use? I'm just trying to understand.
What is the basis set? It's this valence basis set, so F plus some S and P. So what? So you see, so we take Hamiltonian from first principle calculation, this Hopping parameter, and then we invert the matrix. But if you think in a block wave, so this self energy, it has only F orbitals, yeah, because F orbitals is only correlated.
So I just want to make sure I'm trying to read. Mm-hmm. The T over there you get from the band theory.
Yes.
And the G inverse atomic you get just from solving an atom.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. And then there is this old theory, Hubbard 1 from 1960, God knows what. But this is like a big matrix.
Discrete spectrum.
Okay, so you can get the multiplets in solid, but this method will not bring you, I mean, to metallic-like solution because it's Hubbard one. Okay, so this is still very simple introduction. So what is the correlated materials? So you know that correlated materials is a system where you have partially filled d orbital or partially filled f, so 4f, 5f, and some specific maybe other materials where you have sometimes, yeah, sometimes there is some correlation effect even in other. Of course, then you know that you have some spin charge and orbital degrees of freedom here, and they in insulating phase, so this mode insulating phase, they could order. And if they order, then you don't need so much to include this all fluctuation. So you can use this on the level of mean field. And this is what this LDA plus U is, yeah?
So what was the color scheme there
again? Color scheme? No. So this blue is correlated to. So it's still an old slide. I took some, I think, from photo emission person. And for example, plutonium is now considered to be very correlated, you know, but. I'll probably touch it.
By mean field, you mean that LDA plus U is essentially
it's
ab initio Hartree-Fock or even Hartree?
No, it's ab initio Hartree-Fock with a screened Coulomb interaction. Because Hartree-Fock doesn't include screening. So this is exactly what I said. If you want to start with the full Hamiltonian, so theory of everything, then please include all the states and do all many body screening first. And
that's what your plan is.
No. I am not.
I'm not so stupid.
Okay. So if you have this yellow element, so what you're doing? You're doing density functional, which is works perfectly. So no. This is a yellow world, yeah? Yellow page. So this is a density functional, so Walter Kohn was really. So in fact it's starting from John Slater. Of course John Slater knows that if you want to do electronic structure of solid, so you just for exchange correlation potential, you took the simplest approximation, like free, this homogeneous electron gas approximation, this rho in one sort, and then you get result. So this is, I don't know, I like this example which I did with Bob Jones. This is materials which called a Saran plate. I don't know if you have this in electrical oven. So in Europe, I think it's maybe more useful. So there is this glass which has lithium, aluminum, silicon, and ore. This is called eukryptite, and it has zero thermal expansion. It's material science. I don't want to spend time, but you see there is no correlated elements. You could calculate electronic structure, phonon, do even unharmonic phon expansion, then you get a feed experiment, you understand why this electrical oven doesn't break. If you just heat this to, let's say, 2000 degrees of Kelvin.
So what is the big magic with LDA approximation? Is there some Bayesian principle that?
It's a very good question. So why LDA is no, it's a very good question. So why LDA is work? So LDA is just a simple functional of charge density, charge and spin density. Why it's some simple approximation is works, because there is a lot of somehow exact rules, some rules which is satisfied. For example, that integral over exchange correlation whole is equal to minus one. So all exact rules of many body system is satisfied, and you do the simplest approximation for exchange correlation, And it's also very nicely that this error is in exchange and correlation is also going together. So you do one effective potential, so-called exchange correlation potential. And then all the error is going to the form. So of course all the many body music is how this form is not exact. But integral over this exchange correlation potential is exactly give you this minus one, as it should. Good. But then, so we want to go to multi-correlation, yeah? So this is experiments which just for Atsushi Fujimori just shows that if you look at oxide, that sometimes the band theory, this is a band theory, and this is experiment, sometimes it's good. If you go to this vanadium dioxide or this system which have some orbital ordering, so experiments and band theory just diverge. So in the band theory you still have metal, why here you have a correlated metal, here you have insulator. So you just realize that density function is not so good for. And of course, from the point of view of a simple model, so it was well known, of course, from the work of George Zawadzki, Jim Allen, and Jan Zanon, called this Zanon-Zawadzki-Allen phase diagram. So if you take into account this Coulomb, local Coulomb correlation U, so delta is just difference between p states of oxygen and d states of so this is this p states of oxygen and this is correlated d states. So you take into account u, so this is like a Hubbard band, somewhere in between sometimes can come this p states, and this is not even a Mott insulator, they call the charge transfer insulator. So there is a system where you really have a Mott insulator, like this V2O3, there is some system where you have charge insulator, but in reality, all the system is in between. They have a, because this is a very simple picture. So even if you try to do it more accurately, of course, these states are mixed. You cannot distinguish, because here you have a lot of D character. So you cannot say 100% it's charge transfer insulator or Mott insulator. So in reality, they all mixed. Good, then you know that you need to take into account all these orbital degrees of freedom of D electrons and then what is your strategy? Of course, if you want, okay, guys, let's forget about density function. Let's start with this many-body Hamiltonian and try to go somewhere. Nobody succeeds this, yeah? So, no, there is a group so this is more or less like Hartree-Fock route, yeah? So there is a program, I don't know, called Crystal, so there is this Trieste. So you could do Hartree-Fock calculation. But then you will realize that you have unscreened excitation, this unscreened Hartree-Fock. So this is why we just said.
But just a question, how badly does Hartree-Fock do on the uncorrelated materials where the LDA lives well?
Okay. It's not so bad. So you could get a structure reasonable. So excitation spectrum is wrong because you know for example that the band gap in nickel oxide is 4 electron volt experimentally. In Hartree-Fock you'll get 10 electron volt. So some lack of screen. So it's just a question from what starting point you want to start. From already some screened density functional, or you start from pure Hartree-Fock. It's still open question, but I mean, practitioners of electronic structure probably says that it's still better to start from density function in simple in simplest approximation, LDA.
I mean, it's easier to implement numerically.
It's the entire. Yeah, you are far away from somehow. Yeah.
Far.
Yeah. Good. So maybe later I will try on a blackboard again and describe these things. So again, what is strategy? So density functional theory is exact theory, but nobody knows exact functional. So we start from the simplest local density approximation, and then you get some problem. And then you try to patch this problem just including some plus something.
So the local density approximation, you need an energy as a function of density for uniform electron gas in Gaussian.
Yes.
So where do you get that from?
Sipperly and Alder. So there is a famous.
I mean, they do some variation.
No. They do quantum Monte Carlo. So.
Gaussian?
Sure. So what?
It's
zero. It's a variational. It's zero temperature calculation. So.
You start from variation Monte Carlo and you improve with Monte Carlo. Of course, you put some fixed load constraints, but it's very good to give you an energy.
How do you know it's good? I mean, because one doesn't know what the actual energy is.
No, in fact, you ask a very good question. Answer is...
Anyway, that, it probably doesn't matter.
You're right. That probably from the point of view of all this tricky many-body effect, it's not so good. But energy...
Yeah, energy is not so
good. Yeah, but this is energy function.
No, I realize that energy is function of density.
Right. So, and they feed this energy to some form, where analytical form, and get local density approximation. And it's good for the localized system, again, like aluminum, because it starts from fermionic gas. But if the system become correlated, then you get a problem. It's clear. And then you try to patch this problem with including local Coulomb interaction. Strategy is very simple. Okay, so there is a lot of tradition of model Hamiltonian and a density functional, and you just try to again to combine. And there is a lot of different schemes. The simplest is LDA plus local Coulomb interaction, LDA plus U on mean field level. So, but it's Hartree Fock. So we will discuss.
Treat the U with an Hartree Fock using
yes.
The LDA orbitals.
Yes. Yeah, and screen Coulomb interaction. Let's now go into understand why you need this. And then, I don't know, 10 years ago there was a lot of discussion and the question comes, I don't know, LDA plus U, if it's a density functional or it's a not density functional. My point is, indeed it is density functional. It's a little bit better functional. Because you see, this is a very simple form. It's like a Mickey Mouse theory. So you have one orbital and even forget about the spin. So you start from LDA functional. If you want, we can write it. I even didn't specify it. It's well-known functional, LDA. And then you add a local Coulomb interaction between your orbitals. I said again, this is the simplest form, one orbital, no spin. But then, of course, you said, but in average, this Coulomb interaction is already included in average.
In LDA.
You need to subtract something, and you don't know what to subtract.
I mean, sort of Hartree included.
Yeah. And this what we include. We include an average Coulomb interaction. And D is a total number of electrons. It's just in this local density approximation sense. It's functional only of total density. So this is some partial density, and D is a sum. I didn't write this. So and D is a sum of I and I, yeah? Total charge. And then, of course, you just count it like a pair and divide it by two. because interaction is only and the same parameter. So this is idea which yeah still Vladimir. It's a very nice idea. You just subtract average of these terms and not try to find in LDA the part which is responsible for interaction, because it's.
So NI is an operator, the number operator, or is it the?
This is operator.
Okay. Well, then you can't have E equals an operator.
Up to now it's coming. No. Now we do the simplest mean field approximation. I will write it. So let's go to this slide, and then I will write it more exactly. Yeah. This is because there is no spin. There is no spin. This is mean. You couldn't distinguish between Hartree and Fock. This is of course on Hartree level. So you on the level of Hartree approximation, you can define one electron spectrum, which is variational derivative of this Hartree functional. So this is still already Hartree. I'm really sorry. So this is not. This is Hartree approximation.
So NI don't have to be integral.
No.
Then. I mean, they can just be.
This.
It's an expectation value.
This is expectation value.
NI could be continuous variable.
Can be continuous. Yeah, you're right. And this is sum. So if you just do this very simple math, then you get this one electron energy from LDA. Plus correction, and correction comes from these two terms in U 1/2 minus NI. NI can be continuous variable. But again, for correlated orbitals, it's very close to zero or to one, you know. And then you realize that if it's more or less occupied, then you get correction minus 1 over 2. If it's unoccupied, then you get correction to LDA plus U. So if you have this LDA level, then it's if it's really occupied, you get minus 1 over U correction. If it's unoccupied, you get plus. So difference is U. It's a very simple Hubbard-like mean field model. But it was very fruitful in LDA somehow.
Right.
Community.
Well, in a sense, I mean, the fact that it's split by U.
It's reasonable.
No, but the minus U over 2 plus U over 2, it's divided halfway. Is that obvious?
This is very important.
Yeah, right.
It's related with double counting and very important. There is many different methods. It's a good question because, for example, there is a method which is called SIC, SIC. But it's really sick. Huh? It's a sick approximation because in this approximation, you just corrected only occupied state.
It's minus
U.
U minus U, right?
And then you get a very bad spectrum.
So this one on average doesn't show.
Yeah. So it fulfills this all somehow.
Why is it not the other way around? This way.
It depends on the sign of this. why other way? This is a very good question. I don't know answer. It's clear. It's just Hartree approximation. So if you occupy it, your electron, it goes down. Good, and this is this main idea which is behind this paper by Anisimov, Jan Zahn, and Ole Andersen, and there is a nice review article, so you could find it.
What do you say on average it doesn't shift? Because that depends on how many are occupied and how many are empty.
Sure, it's clear. And again, coming back to this experiment.
But maybe if it's different, just one occupied. I mean, if N is one. But I mean, if U is large, it's kind of. Well, I guess if they're half filling.
No. You're right. Of course, it's not. It's symmetric only if you have one electron.
For example,
this example, which is. It can be asymmetric, it depends on occupation, number, and degeneracy of your level. So it's only in this simple model. And again, coming back to experiments, I just want to put one, will be a lot of picture, but this is simple picture. It's gadolinium. So this is photoemission spectrum, and this is inverse photoemission spectrum. And this is this F electron spectral function in LDA plus U. And you see this is, it's in somehow in a good ballpark where it should be. But if you don't put this screen U, then you don't get this. LDA position of LDA level is somewhere here, occupied, and exactly at the Fermi level, unoccupied. It's totally wrong.
So this is the, I'm Richard, this is the procedure. You take
This is still Mcmull.
At LDA, and you take this 1/2 minus N, and you just take the LDA spectrum and shift it in this
But it's not so simple, because it's fun.
It's bad, it's just... what is it? Yeah. What is it? It is that.
It is that. Okay. Plus something more.
I'm not saying it's simple. I mean, the results.
No. It's not simple because it's functional. If it's functional, because you see this occupation number, it depends on total density of state. I will just in second.
That's computed within LDA.
It's
self-consistency,
but in LDA plus U, not LDA, because we have this. Okay. My point is that this is a better density functional. LDA is only this part. And why it's better? Because it gives you this insulating gap. And we know that there is a full theory that if you want to get this intensity functional, so your effective exchange correlation potential should be discontinued, and this is exactly this discontinuity of occupied and unoccupied. So for somehow density functional community, so this picture should be that this is a little bit better density functional than LDA.
Number for you, how do you get that? I mean, what number do you use?
I'm going. So, slowly. But again, coming back. So, this is somehow the simplest, and in fact, more or less like Anisimov. But I remember I discussed with him. Look, if you put this, for example, orbital, which is called a real harmonic, like x squared minus y squared, then you get one potential. Then if you go from complex harmonic, you get another potential. So it's clear that this simplest form is not so-called invariant from your orbital. And then a few years later, so we just write a simplest generalization, which is called rotationally invariant. So this is if you have multi-orbital. So again, we write this LDA, general LDA plus U functional, which is depends on total charge density, and this is of occupation of correlated electron, which is full local spin density functional, plus now the generalized mean field approximation, which has this a full Coulomb matrix and full charge density. And double counting, again, more or less the same way, but just which have a Coulomb and exchange part. Then let's look at this, and of course this occupation matrix you get from local Green function or from local density. So let's look first at this. This is what's called Hardy-Fock. If it's clear, then I somehow don't do, but if it's not clear, I just write one formula, because it probably don't. Okay, let's put. So this is Hartree-Fock approximation or mean field, yeah? Of course, for many body community it's trivial, but so remember that in our Hamiltonian we have this U terms time C dagger C C. And we need to average this in a mean field. So we have all four different indices, I, J, and then we have L and K. So you see that you need to do this variationally. So you need to write this in a proper variational form. It's a functional. It's not a proper orbital, which is already diagonal. It's not diagonal. But you can get it very simply just from many body doing mean field decoupling. So you get this decoupling, yeah, is plus. And this decoupling, when you change fermion, is minus. Hartree Fock. And then you get phi dagger I CK times phi dagger J CL. This is a Hartree tense, minus Fock phi dagger I CL times phi dagger J C K, yeah, clean. And this expectation value is density matrix. So this is in, if you average, this is N I K, this is N J L, so this is N I L, and this is N J K.
Hartree Fock is a self-existent.
This is Hartree Fock. It's Hartree Fock decoupling.
Yeah, I mean, but usually, well, okay.
You need to write it somehow in a matrix form properly. And this is exactly what this I and J is in this case MM prime. So you see this, this is a, and then of course, I didn't put the spin indices here. And here, of course, I put the spin indices because it, so you see, if the spins are different, then you have only Hartree term. If the spins are the same, you have Hartree and Fock. Where is
what Hamiltonian are you doing Hartree Fock on? I see functional. It's like Hartree Fock is something I know how to do on a Hamiltonian.
This is Hamiltonian.
I mean, is it the atomic Hamiltonian? Which
no. Oh, this is Hamiltonian.
So you solve. Wait.
No, but the one electron path is LDA.
Okay, you keep that there. Okay.
This is U. And I just average exactly this. This is for C-degacy. Watch me. It's local Coulomb interaction. It's Hamiltonian.
And you take the average in the
mean field.
We're using the LDA signal determinant, is that right? What is that? I mean, the state,
you take
like the expectation value in.
Zero.
Just some slated determinant.
No. It's zero. This is
LDA. But that's what I'm saying. That's the LDA slated determinant. So you can average, you do Hartree Fock on the Coulomb interaction. You
right.
The Coulomb interaction using the slated determinant, which you got from
yep.
LDA.
Yeah. But do it self. So you see.
You do the Hartree Fock self consistent.
Yeah, Hartree Fock, I do it self consistent.
You don't have to redo LD.
No.
Right.
No, plus redo LD. So you see, now it's this is functional. Now you could redo this. This is occupation matrix. But this also changes the total charge density. You change the zero as well. You change this zero on the fly of your Hartree Fock calculation. So, because, for example, nickel, okay, iron oxide. Iron oxide in LDA is metal, but in LDA plus U is insulator. So, total charge density is also changed drastically.
So the Hartree Fock treatment of the interaction feeds back and affects the
yes,
orbital.
Yes, because it's functional. Okay, so this is a rotationally invariant LDA.
You rate it and then you converge.
Very simple. Because on computational level, this is not a many body technique. Yeah? You just need to calculate occupation matrix in LDA, put it here. So it costs you nothing. Yeah? So maybe 0.1% of computer time on LDA calculation.
Like LDA plus Hartree Fock.
Which is called LDA plus U, yeah.
But you could do it. You could include longer range terms of the Coulomb interaction.
You could include whenever you. Yeah. Yes. There is few attempts to include U between D orbital of metal and P orbital of oxygen. Yes, you could Generalize what
the hard to do? I mean,
no.
You could just do it.
Yeah. I said that there are a lot of, okay, understandable. So how we parameterize this U? Again, I said there is a many method. So you could just calculate, for example, from this GW, screen Coulomb interaction, find Vanier orbital, and just do this brute forcefully numerically. People are doing nowadays this thing. So this is very old and most trivial scheme. So we just say that we use quasi-atomic approximation. So we know how to calculate this matrix in atoms. This is what John Slater did. So expand in spherical harmonic, and then do this integral in this harmonic, you get the three J symbols and this radial integral with this, yeah? This FK called a Slater integral. For example, for D orbital, you need only three parameters, F0, F2, and F4. For F orbital, additional parameter F6. So you see that three or four parameters define you all Coulomb matrix. Very, this is standard LDA plus U parameterization. How you calculate this? You could calculate U and J. I will maybe in one second.
Let's go back, so, sorry, just to make sure. So when you say how do you calculate it is what do you mean by the M's, I guess?
This parameter.
No, but these phi D, the wave functions of the atomic wave function.
But you need to put here not one but I mean some screening. Here epsilon, yeah? So approximation is that in atom you have FK unscreened. But in LDA plus U you put a tilde, you put a screening Slater parameter.
That's okay, but these wave functions, slice of DR, are those Vanier states constructed from LDA band? Or are they just...
Oh, my dear, don't listen to me carefully. I said there is a two way. Mm-hmm. Or you can go and calculate a screen Coulomb interaction in solid. For example, do some simple many-body GW approximation. You get a screen Coulomb interaction, which is RR prime. Then you find the Vanier orbital, and then you just don't need this. You calculate matrix element. This is a simple parameterization.
Okay.
Then you said that.
But then those phi d's are.
It's not important. Not important. No, yeah. Then you said that I will do. So I need to calculate three parameter. I need to calculate reasonably for iron d three parameter f0, f2, and f4. F0 I know it's U. It's average U. And from F2 and F4, I could combine, I will show you later, J, and there is also some kinds of J prime.
But what do you mean you know it? I mean, it seems like you have three parameters.
Right.
Parameter?
No.
So then how do you compute it?
There is so-called a constrained LDA calculation. So you just do it, you calculate n minus 1. You have n, and you try to pull it one election. So the Gunnarsson did a lot of this prescription how to do this. So this is so-called Slater transition state. You could calculate total energy in LD from n and n minus 1. And then you get the parameter U, effective parameter U for 3D shell. You could calculate also effective Hundsrück coupling parameter, J. So if you just rotate one spin, yeah? This you could also do. This is just, if you use a Slater transition state, it's just the difference between one electron.
So the right hand side here is calculated purely within LDA.
Yes, this
not
is. Yeah.
LDA plus U,
no.
LDA.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're using the LDA Vanier states to calculate the.
Effective Coulomb interaction. Right. There is another.
Okay, no, that's good. I got it.
Okay, good. Good. There is another method. What's wrong with one electron? One electron and what?
When you have the n minus
N minus one half. No, there is N minus one half. Where are you?
Okay.
N minus one half is one half. If it's N is equal to, or N and half is then zero. No. There is no negative number.
Well, that shifts the band down, right?
Yeah.
That shifts the occupy overall down.
In the formulation of
the constraint every day, I think you have a formula. Forget about, if you have one election, you calculate just energy. If you pull down this election, then you get zero election. And what? You could calculate zero election, and in all day you can. You calculate total energy difference. But you can calculate with this, like Ole Gunnarsson proposed with this half. So this is just like calculating this integral in the middle point, assuming that from zero and one is linear curve. So this is called Slater transition step. There is another scheme which is more recent, coming from the school of Baroni in Trieste. If you have linear response, it's more close to this GW. If you have linear response, you could calculate the zero susceptibility, full susceptibility in LD, and you subtract inverse. This is like a big matrix. And then you get, this is like a vertex. You know that in many body physics, what is a vertex? It's just different between zero susceptibility and full susceptibility. Nowadays, you could do even here, yeah? And then you get this Green-Coulomb interaction. So there is a nice paper. There's many, but what always, it looks like I didn't have fun.
At the end of the day, you're just getting three parameters out, right?
Yes. Yeah. But somehow, let me... What's going on? Looks like a... Yes. So at the end of the day, you calculate three parameters. And this is exactly this parameter. So F0 is average U. Out of F2 and F4 for d electron, you could come... It's well known also from atomic physics. You combine F2 and F4 in some effective J coupling. And it's interesting that this thing is not screening solid. It's well known from experimental point of view, from Savatsky, and if you do this constraint LDA, you always find J which is of order of one electron volt. From atom and solid, it's not screen. Yes.
Well, moving the community
to do a constraint, you get a higher
estimate of U. Usually it's overestimated.
Right.
And as curious, if you do linear response,
do
you get
better than that? It's better, it's a bit smaller, right? But what is screen in solid? It's only this U. And it's also well known because U it's a zero multiple moment of Coulomb interaction, yeah? And zero multiple, you could very effectively screen. So this is a higher multiple. So higher multiples, you are not effectively screening solids. So very simple. So this is where all electrons are taken to. You need all charge densities.
When you say you get too high a value of U as compared to a particular experiment on a particular material,
yes.
So is there a benchmark material that one uses to try to, compare, to know what U is?
I would say if the orbital is really, really localized, then your constraint and U will work better because the idea is...
No, but it's a question of what better means. It's a question of how do we know whether U is the right value or it's too large. What are we comparing?
You compare it experimentally.
For the emission, people know for what is.
So, but the U will.
So it's just a position of photo emission and inverse photo emission peak. It's about value of U.
Obviously varies in different materials.
Oh, very, very, sure. If the materials is more insulating,
yes.
Then this procedure works extremely good. If materials is go into metallics, then this procedure didn't include this metallic screening.
Yeah, so it's too big.
Yeah. This is why, exactly, you're right. And this is why this linear response with susceptibility, It's better because they include this metallic screening. Okay, there is this one very simple slide I always want to point. This is just for practitioner of LDA plus U. It's on the level of, there is a very simple but severe problem, because coming from this so-called full potential, full charge density, because we know that all the functional depends on a full charge density, non-spherical. But this crazy double counting correction is always spherical. It's like a number. You cannot formulate it in this simple procedure like non-spherical. And then you see that but this LDA plus U functional, rotationally invariant, is also non-spherical because it's a matrix. So if you're not very careful, I would say, you put LDA, you put plus non-spherical U and minus spherical double count. So you didn't take into account non-spherical double count. So you twice include, and this is bad. So there is two different ways, or you include the spherical LDA for these states, and it's non-spherical, and this is canceled.
But what is spherical LDA? Sorry.
it looks like only you are interested.
In
No. This is what I did long time ago, so it depends on the method you're. So again, you know that your correlation orbital, say for nickel excited, only 3D. So I just spheroidize only these 3D paths of energy, because I know that I put these 3D paths exactly by, yeah. And my idea was very simple, because this Hartree Fock is free from self-interaction, yeah? Because Hartree and Fock path exactly cancel. This is a very good approximation. So this is important. You can do it the other way around. You could start from a full density function all day, but then you need to take a spherical approximation of it. There is a very simple, I will show you later. In fact, it's here. There is a spherical approximation for rotational invariant. So Sergei Dudarev just wrote this, it's very simple. So it's just U minus J, it's only one parameter then. So this Hartree Fock, and then you get some functional form, which is this 1/2 times unit matrix minus rho. So this is this. So it also works very well. Okay, let's go. You could calculate exchange interaction, since we are interested here about all this exchange. So if you use LDA plus U functional, you could just calculate the second derivative of two spins, yeah? So you have this on one side D spin, on another side spin, and you calculate stiffness. You calculate somehow analytically the stiffness, and then you get some simple chi zero times this LDA plus U, this effective J. So in fact, it's very useful. This is a little bit more generalized formulation for with any plus plus. So you get exactly first derivative is.
You already got them. I don't understand. So what are you doing? I mean, you've got, if you solve the ALS, you find a magnetic state.
Yeah, but exchange is just the difference between two magnetic states.
Yeah, I guess you want to get the spin wave.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is a spin wave fan. So you could do this analytically. You don't calculate difference between two big energy, you could calculate second derivative analytically. And this is a very, very stable and useful procedure. Okay, and then let's look what this LDA plus U is doing. So this is a standard prototype of mod insulator. And this is a bare LDA result. So you see, so this black is D states and white is a P state. So in LDA, it's like gap is very, very small, tiny 0.2 electron volt. Experimentally, it's about this 4 electron volt. And it's purely luck because you have partially, so in apical excite, you have EG down states, which is up totally empty. For example, if you calculate, again, if you calculate in the middle iron oxide, then there is no way, I think, to get in LDA insulating state. Because in iron, you have this partially filled EG state. But again, so this is a very tiny gap.
So it's luck that the magnetism was
It's a luck
tested
that, yeah.
to fully get.
Exactly. That the magnetism open a gap. But if you include this U with different U value, it's like computer experiments. Of course, we can change. So the value which you obtain from constraint LDA is about 8 or 9 electron volt. Then you see that occupied part goes down, unoccupied part goes up, and these P states become somehow in the middle, but they're mixed with these states. So you go from mod-like to a charge transfer-like of insulating, which is more close to somehow. But again, it's not an exact answer.
I mean, if LSDA gave you a metal, this would still work, right? That
yeah. Still.
Just,
yeah.
Just
yeah. And this is the spin wave spectrum. Yeah. So you have experimental here, spin wave spectrum. If you start from LDA here, you get something like which is 3 times larger. You have because in LDA gap is very small. So spin wave stiffness is very large. And if you increase the gap, then it's like a Anderson super exchange. So this gap values go to denominator, and this spin wave spectrum reduce. And it's also very untricky point, because in the spin wave is a ground state property, spin wave stiffness. It's not it's properties of and it should be exact in exact density functional. Following from the theorem on Walter Kohn.
But
so
why does
vehicle
1 and 3 lie above the
Don't ask me. I mean, because the effective U is supposed to be U minus J. So I don't know. This is all calculation of Solovyov. So my guess that U equal 1 should be more or less coincide, but it's very close to LDA.
How does it do for the local moment? I mean, the magnitude of the local moment.
It's very good. It's drastically improved, because in LDA local moment for nickel is about 1.2, experiments is 1.9, and in LDA plus U you get 1.85. So it's really, so you really localize your moment. You see this, that in LDA is delocalized. Yeah, it's what you want to get. Moreover, you get an orbital. So this is a classical example of this system where you really have orbital ordering. It's well known from experimental point of view. You have one d orbital, for copper, and then they order it antiferromagnetically. So you see, this is this neutron scattering somehow view, and this is results of LDA plus U calculation. So this, we plot just a spin up minus spin down charge density, spin charge density, because you have only one electron, is orbital density for this one electron. And then you see it's clearly like this d orbital, which is point antiferromagnetically, but spin orbital ferromagnetically. This is red spin. So up and next lay down. There is two types of ordering, but this is one of them. So it's absolutely following this simple model theory from Kugel-Chomsky. You also can calculate the energy, because it's functional. So this is total energy as function of this so-called quadrupole distortion. What is quadrupole distortion? So this is oxygen. It's move in a quadrupole way. So two oxygen goes in, two oxygen goes out. So there is a huge quadrupole distortion of about this 4%. In LDA, you cannot get this quadrupole distortion. So cubic structure is perfectly stable because there is no orbital loading. But if you include this orbital loading, cubic structure become unstable, and then you get this quadrupole distortion. Yes.
Magnetic ordering occurs 30 Kelvin. Right. Depending on the type. Now, in your LDA plus U, you automatically get both orbital ordering and magnetic ordering. If you would insist that it would be non-magnetic, will you get orbital ordering?
No. Because this is a mean field solution. In DMFT, I could do this. And I could find that this energy of orbital interaction is much higher than spin interaction. And then I could argue that this is quasi one-dimensional antiferromagnet and real magnetic ordering temperature is very low.
If by chance you would have frustrated magnetic system, yeah, you will find that LDA plus you will give it that it will be magnetic or something like that?
No. Orbitally ordered spin and orbitals are insulated. But I can calculate this exchange parameter in LDA plus U. And this exchange parameter come out very good compared to this spin wave experiment. So you see this, you have a huge antiferromagnetic exchange along J, and almost zero, very small and positive in AB plane. And again, it's very simple to understand it from this orbital point of view, that along Z direction, you have this super exchange part. Along AB, it's always broken, yeah? Because these two orbitals are orthogonal, more or less. So this super exchange, Anderson super exchange exists only along C direction, along AB is next order.
It's ferromagnetic.
And we get ferromagnetic. Because I said that second order effect, Anderson super exchange, which is negative, it's forbidden in AB.
I had a question. See, when you showed that the Gunnarsson thing, for example, there you said U and J were being calculated from LDA.
Yeah.
They'll just give you some numbers, right? But when you are, for example, comparing the spin wave,
mm-hmm.
you are sort of using U as a fitting parameter.
U and J, yeah. But
I'm not saying it's anything wrong.
No, you have input, U and J, but this J is interatomic. You could put a different U if you like. So I said that we did a computer experiment. For me, it's not interesting to reproduce exact experimentally. You will never compete with Mother Nature. Yeah? They do it much faster than you. Yeah. But you could do computer experiments. What is interesting, you could understand physics inside your computer. What is the effect of U? What is the effect of J? How this exchange interaction is come from? And you will understand it. Good. So you could put also spin orbital coupling. So you put LDA plus U plus spin orbit and even non-collinear, you formulate in general form. This was done. So Igor Solovyov, it's very simple. You just combine an orbital and spin index and write this mean field or Hartree-Fock in general spinor form. And then you could, for example, there is a cobalt oxide, you could do your spin moment, orbital moment, again as function of U, if you want. And you see that, again, you get a reasonable somehow number only for this U equals 7, 8. And you also get a counting, because we are somehow interested in frustration and counting, you get the counting of spin and orbital. So there is experimentally even degrees of this counting, you could get it. It's some like here, yeah. And it's very sensitive to COA ratio. So real system is complicated. And you could do this magnetic anisotropy. For example, there is some simple example of cobalt platinum. There's my former students on Sasha Shik and Oleg Mrasov did this. And then you also get good results compared with experiments with somehow spin and orbital moment with this LDA plus U. There is this some orbital parallelization of Brooks, but this is some simplified version, ad hoc, while LDA plus U is physical. So you could get, answer is that if you want, you could get the spin and orbital magnetism and so on.
Oh. Just a question on the, in practice, how, when you do the LDA and you have some orbitals and then you need to calculate, I mean, you do have this Hartree-Fock U, and then and that gives you a new functional, and you recompute the LDA orbits. How much in practice do they change? I mean, just visually, I mean,
it depends how much electronic structure change. Again, if I said, if you go from metal to insulator by putting U, then it's a lot. And it's a good question to this even slide. You even change the forces.
You know,
this is a system which, for example, you're interested in, where you have a spin, orbital moment, yeah? And
the band become narrow then? I mean, you really see that? I don't know. Yeah. Okay.
Sure. So this blue line is LDA band, and this is LDA plus U red. You see that it's all shrinking, yeah?
Not just a shift, it really does vary the width of the band.
This is an insulator, and this is metal.
Yeah, but it's the shape of the band. I mean, it's shifting, I can see that, and that's... You know, that's the
and even structure of your crystal. So we know that this lanthanum titanium oxide and yttrium titanium oxide is very, very distorted. And distortion comes from this orbital ordering. And here, so this big error is forces on atom in LDA. And this is even, I think, some self-consistent procedure. And the smallest error is forces in LDA plus U. So it means that we just didn't do this structure optimization. Also, you could do now, there is this standard VASP code with LDA plus U. For example, you could calculate very nicely structure of V2O3, antiferromagnetic insulating fast. And if you compare the structure, crystal structure of LDA and LDA plus U, it's really different. And LDA plus U give a correct distortion. So you see that the forces are also changing. This is exactly a question, how much is total density change? Sometimes it's...
But actually I asked how much, I mean, if the crystal structure doesn't change, I mean, so you start LDA and you put the LDA plus U, how much do the... I mean, in your pictures you showed shifting of a band. It's a question of how much does the bandwidth change? Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, when you put U of 9, maybe you can just go back to the picture, when you put 9 electron volts, do the bands get much narrower?
Sure.
I don't know that well.
This, look at this, it's become narrow.
It
all depends on the system.
Sometimes
they
can get broader.
Yeah, if they go to the P band, it's become broader. Yeah.
Because the bandwidth is determined by the D-D hybridization. So if the D start off, say, above the P band,
yeah,
and they get pushed into it, then the bandwidth actually broadens.
Okay.
No, but generally it's become narrow. Look at this, it's become narrow. Yeah? And this is broader, it's become narrow. Yeah. Generally.
The nickel oxide, you see, starts narrow, and then it broadens as the
D's
get pushed.
Yeah, he's become broader, yeah.
But the upper Hubbard band...
Upper Hubbard band become always narrow, yeah. So, this is what, yeah, it's exactly the... What, what Nicola said, it's because bandwidth depends on hybridization.
Yeah.
Good, so let me think... You are tired, or... So you see that even crystal structure change, I just again put, we still didn't write many things here. Maybe I'll stop somewhere here and then we discuss. So again, this is Italian mafia, yeah? No, but... Nicola Mazzari, and I like this because he's the first person who realized that this is this simple method you could even put in molecular So you change the chemistry, because if you have transition metal or oxygen, iron, if you have reaction, so this local Coulomb physics is also important. And he just proves that some magnetic ground state, so there is some experiments, and you get it nicely in LD plus U, and there is some chemist. I like quantum chemists also can be simplified. Also, you will not compete, because quantum chemistry, it's a small system. They have this couple cluster, and they could get. You could get also charge ordering. So normally in LDA, so because it's homogeneous, it's very hard to get stable this charge ordering. But in LDA plus U, you could get this, some results of Anisimov, the standard, this half-metallic Fe3O4. You know that there is some charge ordering and spin ordering. The total number, it's again question, if you look at the total charge density where you have hundreds of electrons, effect of this D electron is very small. You will not see this by eyes. But if you look at this simple charge of some orbital, then it's always 1.7 electron which is changed from this side to this side. Yeah? And you could again calculate exchange, you could do this quantum Monte Carlo for effective Heisenberg model and get a very nice magnetism. So I think I have a lot, but so let me think you're tired. So I have also a lot of things going beyond somehow, including
fluctuation.
So this is still mean. What happens if you want to include fluctuation? Yeah? So this what we discuss is sometimes we include only Hubbard splitting. But we know that, of course, there is metal fluctuation which goes to renormalization of this quasi-particle. And this is a picture which we like to go generally. So Hubbard bends and renormalized quasi-particle. And this, of course, you get in this local, in dynamical mean field theory. So I don't want to discuss this. Let me just... So we can do this later. So general view is that in LDA plus DMFT you include local fluctuation, but just local. So you get just energy dependent self energy. And this is your basis set, you have a non-local operator. What is connection to LDA plus U is just a static mean field approximation to this. And that's it. So if you want to do some short range, even fluctuation, you could go to some kinds of cluster DMFT. But you're not going to a large cluster. If you really want to calculate K dependence, there is now a new scheme. If you're interested, I can discuss this, so-called a dual fermion. We can just decouple very nicely interaction. So we start from this local DMFT and go to K dependence, which probably can be interesting in HTC and so on and so forth. But let me just maybe stop here. I just want again maybe to be here to mark. Or if you open, it's good. So let me just how you just close. Let's discuss the zoo of this LDA plus something, yeah? So let's put electronic structure of correlated solid. Of course you have density functional theory, which is exact, but nobody knows a functional. So you need to have a functional of N of R. You know this in very simple approximation called LDA, or maybe one little step further, GGA, but it's not improved. If you are many body theories, of course you start from Leitinger word to Baim-Kadanoff. So you say that, I know how to write my functional of a full Green function, k and omega. And then I get electronic structure of my solid, but it's impractical. Nobody did for nickel oxide this calculation. There is GW calculation, but this is just the first diagram on it. But there is a nice way, so starting probably from Gabi-Kotliar, so we have some kinds of DMFT-like function. Or they call this spectral energy functional. So you could get a functional of local Green function. So you forget somehow this k and r, and then you could find this functional numerically, solving this iteratively impurity, Anderson-like impurity model. And of course there is also some kinds of things, which is if you do this static, then you get all, so with this approximation of LDA, so it's known, static version of these things will give you LDA plus U. And it's true, because if you think somehow how you define the Green function, so I will define this in real space, yeah? I will put indices, I don't know, my tau prime or tau minus tau prime, some kinds of average time ordering, C I tau, tau prime j. Then if I do Fourier transform, of course then I get this K and omega, yeah? If I reduce all my fluctuation, many body fluctuation locally, I get this GII, which is local function, it's function of omega, and then I know that DMFT give me the proper functional. And if I do the static approximation,
within
particular scheme, with the reduced Hamiltonian, but I said the zoo, then I will get this LDA plus U. This is, yeah.
I mean, so if you just take a, you know, Hubbard model and half filling, something like that, I mean, my understanding is that with DMFT, you can find, non-magnetic solutions which are still insulating for the gap, which is extremely unphysical, and it's the thing that I really don't like about that approach.
Right.
LDA plus U, you probably can never do that. Is that correct?
No. You need orbital and spin ordering.
Let me just do
Spin.
Hubbard, spin.
Then you need spin ordering.
You
need antiferromagnetism.
And you always get that. I mean, you want.
But then of course you get some kinds of, because mean field hard to focus is very simple. Then you could get different spin ordering, some kinds of k.
But you're making it sound like in that case DMFT. LDA plus U and do not coincide.
No. They coincide if you just use the same symmetry. But in LDA plus U, you could easily, because it's a very simple method, you could get a different spin structure, different orbital structure.
You have to get some spin structure.
You have to get some.
Otherwise, you don't get an insulator.
Right.
Whereas DMFT, you could. There are solutions of the DMFT equations in which there's no spin order, but there's a gap.
Right.
Insulating.
Yeah, but this is artifact of local approximation.
Yeah, completely.
That's what I mean. If you go to this K dependence, then you understand. So we can discuss it maybe in one special seminar and formal. I could show how you can start from DMFT and go beyond. But I like this scheme DMFT because this is very physical. You first renormalize your Coulomb effect locally, and then you go. If you start to solve again the theory of everything, it will never work.
Yeah, but, I mean, all the subtle, I mean, I would say, you know, the wave function correlations and physics isn't all that necessarily local in space. I mean, I don't see why it's so virtuous. I mean, I prefer DFT plus U, or LDA plus U.
Well, but, I mean, partly because this DMFT can just give you results which are just nonsensical. Once it's paramagnetic mode insulator.
Right.
I mean, it's just, it's, and
but paramagnetic
it's qualitatively incorrect. It just can't be.
Why? But they, no, no, but paramagnetic mode insulator exists.
No. Well, it does, but then they have topological, then there's a theorem by Matt Hastings, we can talk about it. Mm-hmm. So, one, you know, spin a half per unit cell, that, I mean, essentially the theorem is that if you don't break any symmetries, you have to nevertheless get low energy excitation, right? You can't just have a hard gap from a unique ground state, and so...
No, you have local excitation, sure.
Right, okay, but... paramagnetic mod insulators are extremely non-trivial things. They're spin liquids or something.
Extremely unstable, probably.
No. Well, that's a different issue. Once you're in them, not necessarily, maybe it's hard to find them. Hmm? That,
sorry,
I mean,
EFT, we're talking about finite temperature
phase
diagrams.
Yeah,
well, no, but I'm
finite temperature.
I know, I just want to, there's a place where DMFT gives something which is qualitatively incorrect and very unphysical, and I'm pointing that out. I mean, I'm not saying it shouldn't be used. I mean, but it's something. It's a feature of which I, you know, which and it's in the regime which some of us are most interested in, which is the ground state or very low temperatures in insulators, where you know where the magnetism is being frustrated or what have you. And so there isn't really maybe any magnetic order. I mean, there are some materials, and so I mean, so DMFT will, you know, can give you a paramagnetic more insulator with a unique ground state and a gap, you know, which is just
no. But
it's qualitatively incorrect. I mean, it just doesn't.
No, but this is just these things which of course people like to find in DMFT, which is its paramagnetic insulating phase. But if you, because you just said that this is totally frustrated light.
It could be, I mean, yeah.
But if you relax this, so if you calculate this DMFT anti-ferromagnetic ground state, then you get very close to LDA plus two. You get a gap, anti-ferromagnetic ground. You could do this in LDA plus two very easily.
No, but with LDA plus two, I don't think you can find, it doesn't exist in the theory, correct me if I'm wrong, a paramagnetic mod insulator.
Paramagnetic, no.
Okay, and the DMFT, it does. So
yes,
you can find solutions which are qualitatively
incorrect. If you forbid
the ordering state, if you say that your spin is totally frustrated. So
this is a solution of the equation.
No. Right? No. Okay. No, let me remind you. Of course, in a phase diagram,
it may not be a global minimum. That depends on the Hamiltonian, right? I mean, I'm sure I can find one where it is.
Of course, yeah.
You put in a, you can certainly find Hamiltonian, which is a global minimum.
This is phase. It's totally filled with this anti-ferromagnetic insulating solution. So this paramagnetic insulator is this tiny phase, which is...
What is that sorry, what material is this? Oh, no, this is the...
That
depends on the Hamiltonian. I mean, you get the you only get that, and that's in the quantum regime of interest, and it's just qualitatively wrong. It's not physical.
Because you then probably don't get into count K depend.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, I think when, you have to
actually...
I agree.
You include a cluster, does that solve the problem?
Well,
I think you
have to get topological order or gapless critical spin liquid. Those are the only two choices.
Spin liquid you will not get, because spin liquid is K-dependent. I agree. Yeah. So if you have short range order, then the cluster DMFT would solve the problem. But there is a lot of interesting cases where spin orbital liquid, spin liquid, then...
It just won't work.
Right? You're right.
Yeah. Exactly. Which is okay. I mean, that's
and a cluster will still give you a gap, right? Because it's finite.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
I think you can still get a paramagnetic mod insulator using the cluster. I mean, you really have to go to an infinite cluster to solve the whole problem.
Infinite cluster, they want to know.
Yeah, there we go.
No, because if you increase the cluster size, then the sign problem will kill you. Because only for small cluster you just suppress sign problem.
Yeah, but one site there's no sign problem.
One site there's no sign problem.
But two
if
you, there is,
no, if your green function is diagonal in orbital space. So it's a tricky thing. No. You could prove.
Do it again? Sorry. Sorry. Yeah.
Multi-orbital one cycle. If your green function is diagonal in orbital space, then the one side multi-orbital quantum Monte Carlo have no sign code.
If you assume it is, I mean,
No, you could prove that there is no sign code.
No, there are some. But that's a filling. You need some specific filling.
No, for local. No. For local Anderson solution, no sign problem. Locally, no. For any filling.
But you're just saying, if you assume within the DMFT that the Green's function is local, I mean, up in orbitals, then there's no sign problem in finding
the solution. No.
You know what you're saying? Understand.
This is orbital in local. So you have local m prime of omega.
Yeah.
If it's proportional to delta m prime, then there is no sign problem.
I know, but you have to. Do you assume it's not, and then
it depends on your symmetry.
Oh.
It depends on the symmetry of your crystal.
Okay, so let's say the symmetry is such that it's...
If it's symmetry is such that it's low...
I got it. So if it's a particular symmetry, then there's no sign problem, but I see.
Yeah.
And the cubic symmetry.
Yeah. If it's cubic symmetry, it's diagonal.
Okay.
For proper orbital.
For
real orbital. So you need to...
Choose proper orbital or it's diagonal, then there's no sign. Small cluster, sometimes, if it's frustrated, triangle has a problem.
Yeah.
If it's increased cluster signs, then sign problem. So this is probably the most reasonable method, is just use some perturbation around, to expand around the solution. Ready for it. Okay, thank you.